My guest at this time is Gordon Chang. He's a leading expert on East Asian politics and foreign policy and the North Korean nuclear threat. He's also the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. We've asked him to offer his analysis of how President Trump addressed North Korea in perhaps the most memorable portion of his State of the Union message Tuesday night. And Gordon, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you so much, Greg.
Well, let's talk about this from a couple different perspectives. I think what most folks will take away, and was certainly the thrust of the portion of the speech on North Korea, was the brutality of the regime. The president highlighted the story of Otto Warmbier, which you and I have talked about before. He's the college student that was sentenced to 15 years hard labor for essentially stealing a poster. And then you had, of course, the defector from North Korea, who powerfully raised his crutches in the House chamber after the president told his story of losing limbs as he scrounged for food and ultimately hobbled on crutches for thousands of miles to freedom. How important was it to crystallize the repression and the brutality in North Korea, since we often get lost in the back and forth between the insults and what the latest missile test is about what life is on a day-to-day basis inside that country?
What President Trump did last night was really landmark. What he did was he made the case for regime change in North Korea. Yeah, of course, he talked about the threat to the American homeland, but he linked that back to the nature of the Kim family regime. And he did that by telling those two stories, the one of brutality, Otto Warmbier, and the other of the triumph of the human spirit, which is the escapee, Ji Sung-ho. And that really was, for me, the most inspirational moment of the night, when Ji held up his crutches in his right hand in a signal of victory. That was just so important, because what President Trump is saying is that this is the regime that is threatening us.
And in addition to that, there's been some chatter. I don't know if I would call it mainstream chatter, but some chatter, given the fact that the president can be somewhat unpredictable and insulting in his comments, that somehow these two leaders are on a parallel or can be compared to one another. How well do you think he put that to rest last night?
Yeah, I've never bought that narrative, and that really, I think, just a false equivalence. You know, President Trump is trying to contain the Kim family. The Kim family has been a threat not just to the United States, but to the rest of the international community well before Trump became president. This goes back decades, and it goes back, of course, to almost the founding of the regime. The regime was founded in 1948, and in 1950 it invaded South Korea in force in June. So we've got to remember that the Kim family has ambitions which are dangerous. A series of American presidents have failed to stop the Kims. We've had misguided policies for the last three decades. And North Korea did not become instantly dangerous at January 20th at noon of this year, of last year. This is a problem for the entire planet. And it's, you know, Trump is doing his best in a very dangerous situation.
So now that we're talking, at least in vague terms, as you see it, about regime change and at least certainly a denuclearized Korean peninsula, which he made very clear at the UN a few months ago, we've heard some rumblings in very general terms, Gordon, about a different approach, that something was being worked out. You've certainly explained why you think China is the key to all this and how financially putting the screws to China is ultimately the key here. What do you sense is the actual strategy from this administration to address this?
Yeah, I don't think the administration has settled on a strategy. At least, let me put it this way. From the beginning, the Trump administration has tried to cut off the flow of money to North Korea. And we've seen this, for instance, in his landmark September 21st executive order, which said if you do business with North Korea or if you handle their money, you're not doing business with the United States. That's important. Also, last year, the Trump administration pushed through three sets of U.N. sanctions. That's a very sound policy. But there are voices in the administration that are thinking that this is not a time for sanctions. This is a time to strike North Korea. And that, I think, is something where the administration has not decided on what to do. We got a glimpse of this in an op-ed in the Washington Post from Victor Cha, who was considered to be the administration's pick for the ambassador to Seoul, and who has been cut loose. And I think that part of it is really because the administration has yet to figure out whether it wants to opt for force. I think it would be an exceedingly bad idea. But, you know, right now there are a lot of voices, and this is where the contention is inside the administration and outside the administration.
Gordon, back in the fall at the UN, the president also made a big deal out of the fact that he had convinced China to put the screws to North Korea. And you said at the time, we'll see exactly what China's willing to do in terms of enforcing this. Do we know anything at this point, just a few months in, whether the Chinese are getting more serious?
Well, you know, they're getting more serious, but they're also violating UN sanctions. And they've been doing that almost openly since October. We've seen these ship-to-ship transfers of oil. Also, North Korean ships that are under sanctions, in other words, are not allowed to visit ports outside North Korea, they've been turning on their transponders in Chinese ports. And so all of this has been recent. And when all of this activity occurs with China smuggling commodities in and out of North Korea, it also means that Chinese financial institutions are almost surely involved. So now, you know, it's up to the Trump administration to hold China accountable. It signaled that it would do that, but it has yet to really apply the full weight of American pressure to protect the American people. And so this is going to be, I think, the crucial test, whether the United States is willing to enforce the sanctions and U.S. law against Chinese lawbreakers.
You've mentioned this before, but real quick, summarize what China would be doing if they were really serious.
They would cut off all financial transactions with North Korea. The Chinese banks would get out of the business of handling North Korean money. Also, we would see China not buying and selling commodities that are prohibited by UN sanctions. We would see basically an end of commerce between China and North Korea.
You mentioned a few minutes ago, Gordon, that one of the things that we need to be worried about here is the ambitions of the Kim regime. It goes back generations now, South Korea perhaps being the biggest bullseye here. Over the past 20 years, one of the things we've heard a lot is that, well, North Korea is not much of a threat. They just want to get some sort of respect, and they want a lot of money, which we've provided to them from time to time. Given where the North Koreans are now with the advancement of the technology, what do you think is the bigger ambition for them?
Well, the ambition for them now, as it was from the very first day of North Korea, is to take over South Korea. And that is the core goal of the Kim family. And indeed, it is considered by the Kims to be essential for their own survival. Because you got two Koreas, one rich, one poor, sitting side by side, of course. And the people in the poor Koreas are not going to put up with this forever. They've got to see the Kim family achieve its goal, which is taking over and eliminating the South Korean state. If the Kim family can't do that, poor North Koreans are not going to sacrifice indefinitely.
Last question. We know the Olympics are coming up. I believe they're going to start at the end of next week. And we've seen the North Korean charm offensive here. They've had some talks with the South Koreans. They're going to march in together. They're going to have a unified team. They let Lester Holt do some pieces that they were certainly happy with from North Korea. Some believe this is a charm offensive that they're not, they shouldn't be given, that it's only going to help them seem more reasonable on the world stage. What do you make of all that?
Well, you know, I'm happy to have the North Koreans participate in the Olympics. It gives an opportunity for them to see the outside world and to defect. South Korea, however, should not be paying for North Korea's team, which is doing. And there are a lot of these inter-Korean Olympic projects which look like violations of UN sanctions. The U.S., for various reasons, I think, has allowed this to continue. But, you know, the South Korean public now is starting to rebel against this jointness, especially this joint women's hockey, ice hockey team, because South Korean athletes have been turfed off their own team to make way for the North Koreans. That's played very poorly in South Korea.
So a lot to watch here in the coming weeks. Gordon, as always, we appreciate your time and your expertise. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Greg.
Gordon Chang, leading expert on East Asia and the North Korean nuclear threat. He's also the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.